Radio Free Asgard.
And yes, indeed, this is Radio Free Asgard, episode number 104, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the show. Me taking a break from Minecraft here just to talk to you about Thor for a little while. Well, that's not really true. I actually have only been playing maybe, you know, an hour or two a day at the most. It really is a lot of fun, but it does get old fast for me. So I've been playing it, you know, like I said, for maybe half an hour at a time, and then I'll walk away, do something else, and then come back and play a little more. That's kind of what I've been up to. Yeah, so my Asgardian world that I'm building is starting to look pretty cool. I'm actually beginning to be happy with some of the stuff that I've built. I've got my own little house, which is kind of a cross between Asgard and, I don't know, somebody like Frank Lloyd Wright. I had this sort of modern sensibility to it. And I've got a Viking longhouse that I've built, which is just this enormous carved out of a mountain Viking longhouse with a big throne on one end. And I'm working on what I call the temple, which is going to have a giant Thor's hammer floating in the air in there. And I'm thinking that's going to be pretty cool. So I've got big plans. And one of the problems, though, with the game is that you spend a lot of time gathering stuff and gathering the reagents or whatever you want to call them to create the stuff that you're crafting with. And I suppose I could cheat and play in creative mode, but somehow I think that building things isn't quite as fun if you don't have skeletons shooting arrows at you the whole time. Anyway, so we are going to be covering an issue this week, so let's just get on to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming
So this week we are looking at Thor number 156, has a cover date of September 1968, retailed for 12 cents. Cover art is by Kirby, inked by Coletta. Not one of their better efforts, I have to say, but it shows Thor and the Warriors 3 and Sif and Baldur and the Recorder. And they are all guarding the giant sword, the Odin sword. Hopefully to protect it from the mighty Mangog. And Thor is standing on top of it, swinging his hammer around as though he's getting ready to strike. And Volstagg is sort of cowering behind the hilt of the sword. And the other ones look as though they're ready to start attacking anybody who gets in their way. Except for the Recorder, who's just kind of, standing there like a robot. Anyway, so we open up to the splash page. The mighty Thor in The Hammer and the Holocaust. And of course, we have the credits. This was created by Stan the Man Lee and Jack King Kirby. Vince Coletta was the inker, and it was lettered by Sam Rosen. We pick up where we left off last issue with the Mangog having reached out and grabbed Thor, and he's starting to squeeze him with the strength of a billion really, really weak aliens. And it says here, possessing the strength of an entire alien race, of a billion beings, the indescribable Mangog is sworn to avenge the death of his murderous forebears by destroying the entire universe. And if that's not enough to shake you up, forget it. And Thor is saying, Mangog, I have found thee at last. And Mangog's like, nay, son of Odin, 'tis I who have found thee, and now prepare to die. The Mangog has picked up Thor and he's shaking him around. And I have to say, I've noticed in this issue, notably, really sketchy inks. And we have this is sort of Jack Kirby in his squinty eye style. And there's no backgrounds hardly. And they have like a show of a close-up of Thor's hand here that doesn't have any fingernails on it. And it's sort of a misshapen hand at that. So I'm guessing that, Kirby did really, really basic layouts for this issue, and Kirby didn't provide finished pencils for Coletta to ink. Unlike last issue, where I was, talking about, enthusing about how much the detail was and how good everything looked. This issue is kind of a flip side of that. So anyway, the Mangog is shaking Thor around like a rag doll, and he's saying, "Thine immortal father, cursed be his name, hath annihilated the race from which I spring. 1,000,000,000 worlds, 1,000,000,000,000 beings gone, all gone. Now think upon it, doomed one. Think of what an awesome price must now be paid for the murder of Mangog's brethren." "Though thy words be true," says Thor, "their essence be false. They who are slain had themselves brought death to 1,000 galaxies. They dared attack hallowed Asgard itself, and had we fallen, the cosmos entire would have been no more." Well, that's very egotistical. He thinks that Asgard's the whole universe. "Thus did my father but end a living cancer, even as I, his son, shall now put an end to thee. So be it." And he grabs his hammer out of his belt and he smashes the Mangog with it. We see a giant pink explosion and kind of rocks flying everywhere. But the Mangog is pretty much unshaken by this. And he's still holding on to Thor with his hand and shaking him around. Don't see what he's gaining from just kind of shaking Thor like this. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And Thor draws his hammer back to strike the Mangog again. He says, "No matter how mighty thy limbs may be, the hammer of Thor shall give them pause. Whilst the sinews of Thor shall strike without let, so long as evil endures." And the Mangog gets struck in and he lets go of Thor. It's like, "Truly thou art offspring of Odin. Truly thou hast power beyond compare. But 'tis Mangog who is the master. See how I shrug off thy strongest blow and hurl thee away like a leaf in a storm." And he throws him into a big pile of green boulders, colored in a way that only... It's like George Russo's or somebody. These big green boulders. I guess they're green kryptonite or something. No, they're not glowing. So I don't know. I guess they're not green kryptonite. Anyway, so Thor hits the pile of rocks with a scrack. And Mangog is still talking here. "And so the vengeance begins. Whilst the Thunder God falls to his death amongst yon boulders, Asgard alike shall fall before the might of Mangog." And we have a caption here that asks, "But what of Fendral, Hogun, and the voluminous Volstagg?" And we see that they're still trapped in these rocks that the Mangog had squeezed together. And we get the top half of the page is this big shot of Mangog just kind of yowling. Fandral's hand is sticking out with his sword. Says, "Gross coward thou art, afraid to set us free."
"Nothing that lives, nothing that breathes can stay the wrath of Mangog."
Now I'm beginning to wonder where Jason Aaron gets his dialoguing sense for gore. He talks a lot like the Mangog, doesn't he? And he's got the same kind of, I don't know, boasting and all that stuff.
"But hold, a voice doth assail my ears."
And he's talking about Fandral, of course. And we hear a voice coming inside. I don't know if it's Fandral, but it's, "If harm hath come to noble Thor, most deadly shalt thou pay, ungodly one."
"'Tis the Asgardian gnats I thought entombed. They dare to challenge Mangog. One mere thrust of my multi-powered tail, and they shall dare no more."
And Mangog takes his tail and he swipes at the rocks, sends them all flying in a big red explosion with a big karoom. And we see the warriors three have been uncovered. They start to advance on the Mangog. The Mangog starts to advance on them and they're sort of falling back a little bit. And the Volstagg is like, "Stalwart, stand thee back. Valiant Volstagg shall be the first to down yon villain."
"Then why standest thou, as though rooted to the spot?" says Hogan.
"Behind me all, the blade of Fandral fair begs to save the day."
"As Thor did perish, so now shalt those who serve his master."
And Volstagg is trying to drag Fandral back. Says,
"Fandral, have no fear. Mountainous Volstagg stands behind thee."
And Fandral strikes at him, but his sword just kind of bounces off. And he's like, "I strike, but my steel is turned aside. What looks like skin is truly living armor. No steel can hope to pierce it."
"Hogun, to my side. Fandral hath been undone," says Volstagg.
What's happened here is the Mangog has grabbed Fandral's sword, and he's lifted it up over his head, and Fandral's still hanging onto it. So Fandral has gotten dragged up as well.
So this is the blade which thou meant for Mangog, and thou art the cream of thy sovereign's defenders. Victory cannot help but be mine.
And then Hogan lunges forward, swinging his mace, and he's like, never. Not whilst an Asgardian lives, and Hogan still lives. Because, yeah, remember, Hogan's not an Asgardian. He's one of the Vanir. Remember that. Anyway, so we then shift scenes to back to Asgard and castle, you know, the throne room, basically. And we see the insidiously evil Loki sitting on a throne and drinking out of this purple drinking thing. It's not really a drinking horn. I guess it's kind of horn-like. It's just this really weirdly shaped cup that, of course, it would never stand if he set it down. And it looks like it should hook over something upside down. So I don't know what it is. It's a drinking horn, of course, but it's just very awkward. Anyway, so Loki is sitting here and he's talking to his advisor guy, who's looks like he's reading out of a scroll or something. This looks like it was designed to be a pinup, because it doesn't look like the characters are actually talking. But of course, Stan has added to some dialogue here. He says,
my lord, our armies have been put to rout by the indescribable power of Mangog. Through the realm, naught is seen but death and carnage. Whilst Odin slumbers, 'tis thou who must lead us. All in good time, all in good time. Did not the god of thunder speed to battle? We shall wait till I know for certain that my brother is dead. But by then it may be too late. Speak no more. Loki wearies of such matters.
And he's drinking. Oh, he is drinking out of the cup, so I guess it is a cup.
My lord, methinks thou art more concerned with thy brother's certain death than with the fate of the realm eternal. Even if it were so, 'tis no affair of thine. Once Thor has fallen, we shall ensure that Odin doth not awaken. Then will the crown be mine forever! At that moment I shall summon Carnilla, Queen of the Norns, to combine her magic with mine, and then shall Mangog fall. But, sire, what if thy magic too shall fail? Is not now the time to act? Patience, counselor, patience. Is not Loki craftiest of all? I have other men still under arms, loyal but to me. My elite guard shall protect us, though Asgard itself be crushed. But they are not to join the fray till it be too late to save the god of thunder.
And they go wandering out of the throne room together, the Loki and this guy. Kind of wonder where Loki set down this cup, because, you know, it looked like it was pretty full. And he's probably spilled all over the place. Anyway, so they go wandering out, and they're confronted by a bunch of, looks like Asgardian soldiers. And Loki's like,
what madness is this? The beaten, tattered remnants of what had been my elite guard.
Forgive us, son of Odin. Storming our hiding place on his way to Asgard, the monstrous Mangog discovered us.
Hundreds were by him slain in the space of a dozen heartbeats. Hide us, sire. Grant us shelter.
None there are who may oppose Mangog and still live. Asgard is doomed. Our only hope is flight, for even now he draws closer.
And Loki seems a bit disturbed by this, and his advisor is like,
thou should have aided the Thunder God whilst there was time. Now there's no place left to flee. If Mangog draws the Odin sword, all the universe shall crumble as Ragnarok falls upon us. Enough. I must think.
And we shift scenes back to squinty-eyed Thor, who had been thrown at a big pile of boulders. I don't know why Mangog thought that that would be, you know, his utter defeat. I mean, he's been thrown at walls and crap before, and that never really affected him before. But anyway, Thor is laying there in the rubble of these big green boulders. And so Thor decides to whine a little bit here, saying,
without my immortal strength and the enchantment of Mjolnir, I would now be in the awesome arms of Hela, goddess of death, because Hela is so awesome, especially her arms. Never have I faced such a foe as Mangog. Never hath a battle seemed more hopeless or a cause more desperate.
But he gets up and he says, but still I am the god of thunder. Still the wind and the storm are mine to command, and command them I will. And he starts whirling his hammer around like crazy, and he whips up a big old tornado. It's, of course, the Ajax White Tornado. We're used to seeing that. And he's just traveling in tornado form, I guess. And the Warriors Three are standing up on top of a cliff nearby. And Hogan's like, "Behold a cyclone slicing through the very ground beneath us. It approaches the peak where Mangog stands." And Mangog is throwing around, looks like Fandral and Volstagg here. And he's shouting out, "Who shall be the first to die? Come back, thou timorous one!" As he grabs on Volstagg as he's running away.
"Volstagg, timorous? I with the heart of a lion? Thou hast mocked me. Thus I take my leave."
And the tornado is coming towards the Mangog, and Mangog's like, "What is this? A storm from nowhere, threatening to engulf us all." And Volstagg is running away. He says, "'Tis the doing of Thor. We are saved." And Mangog is like, "So, the Thunder God lives. No matter. Mangog stands his ground." And the big storm hits Mangog, and you see the wind blowing Mangog over. Not really. I mean, Mangog is resisting the storm pretty well.
"Now blow, ye winds, it matters not. Asgard still shall fall this day. No wind, no storm can fell me, for I am Mangog, and the power of a billion, billion beings is mine."
And there's a big magenta explosion of rocks and so forth, and the storm dissipates, and Thor's laying on the ground in front of the Mangog. And Mangog is taunting Thor here.
"Ha! Thy limbs are weary, thy strength is spent, and the chill wind of fear doth travel across thine heart."
"Nay, unspeakable one, fear is no stranger to the son of Odin. Only a fool hath never known fear. But the gallant fight on, and so doth Thor."
And he shoots lightning out of his hammer, and I don't think we've seen this before. It seems to me, I don't remember seeing this before, though we know he can do this. So I don't remember. It may have happened way, way, way back. Anyway, so Thor is shooting lightning out of his hammer.
"Taste thou then a bolt of the purest lightning, as only the god of thunder can so create it."
And Mangog's not too impressed by that, and he doesn't seem to be even remotely staggered about it. And he's like,
"Lightning against Mangog? Truly, thou art mad."
And Thor is like blasting like lightning at him. And it looks like a flamethrower coming out of his hammer. The overall effect is really, really cool. I just kind of wish that it wasn't such a sketchy page. But Thor's like,
"Mad mayhap, but even the madman may fight. And even the madman may win."
And we get a little bit of exposition here. And as the monstrous Mangog walks slowly through the seething blasts, the very soil beneath his feet grows hotter and hotter. And all of a sudden, the ground explodes around the Mangog, and we see what Thor has been up to here. There's the rocks flying everywhere and a big, huge yellow explosion. And Thor's saying,
"'Tis done. The ground hath erupted like a living volcano. And trapped within yon lethal fire stands Mangog. Now must I flee, or the land be ravaged by the deed just done. For in the wake of such power unleashed, must come the unthinkable holocaust."
Now, I know that whenever you say the word holocaust nowadays, you think of something very specific. Back then, it didn't mean the same thing as it means now. So, I mean, it doesn't have that World War II connection. I mean, that kind of didn't come in until the late 70s. Anyway, so Thor's running away from where the Mangog is standing, and he happens across the Warriors Three, who are hiding behind some rocks here, and he says,
"Fandral, Hogan, Volstagg, get thee to my side."
And Fandral's like, "The Thunder God survives."
"Then the cause is not lost."
"Truly the might of Thor doth seem to equal Volstagg's own."
"No time is there for speech," says Thor. "We must flee this land, whilst we yet may." And Thor begins to whirl his hammer around as though he's going to summon a portal or whatever, but that doesn't happen. And Hogan's like, "Well, what of Mangog?" And Thor takes off flying, which seems a little odd, and Hogan is grabbed around Thor's legs, and Fandral's hanging on to to Hogun's legs, and Volstagg is hanging on to Fandral's feet. It looks awkward as hell, and it probably is awkward as hell. Anyway, Thor says, "Methinks, alas, the monster doth still live." And we then shift scenes to the Rainbow Bridge and Heimdall, who's standing guard as always. Heimdall wearing a very stupid-looking helmet here. And he notices a stranger approaching. "A stranger doth approach, the like of which mine eyes have never beheld." And this mysterious blue figure lands on the Rainbow Bridge, and Heimdall says, "Halt, and be thou recognized, or face the steel of Heimdall, him who guards the gates." And we see, you know, as City of Asgard in the background, and Kirby space, and it's all very impressive. And this figure lands on the bridge in front of Heimdall. We recognize him as the Recorder, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this at the end of the show, but the Recorder says, "Vent not your wrath upon my person. I have come as friend from a far, far distant world." "Speak then," says Heimdall. "Let the words of thy lips stay the fury of my blade." So apparently he made Heimdall really angry. And the Recorder lands on the Rainbow Bridge, and he's trying to reason with Heimdall here. "Before you stands a product of the planet Rigel. One function have I, and one alone. I do observe. I do record." And Heimdall's like, "Art thou then the famed Recorder?" "In living truth, I am." And he pushes a button and opens up his chest piece. You can see all his inner workings. And he tells Heimdall, "I seek the God of Thunder, who I have known before." And Heimdall believes him. You know, I guess he buys his story. He says, "Thy words ring true. I grant thee trust. Warrior, ho, come you to a halt." And there's one of these Asgardian gods crossing the bridge. The soldier is like, "How speaks noble Heimdall?" "Yonder is him who the legends call Recorder. Guide him, I prithee, to the mighty Thor." "It shall be done." And this Asgardian takes off on his horse, which flies, which I don't quite get, because they were riding on the bridge before that. But I don't know. Do Asgardian horses fly without wings? Because that seems to be the case. Anyway, I think that they've been fairly inconsistent about that. Maybe they don't like to fly. They just fly when they have to. I don't know. Anyway, so this anonymous Asgardian god or whatever says, "I will lead thee to the palace royal, though 'tis with heavy heart I do so. For dire peril confronts the realm, and every sword is sorely needed." And Heimdall's sitting here thinking after they leave. It says, "Whilst the shadow of Ragnarok overhangs us all, Heimdall tends his post. But if Mangog be not halted, I fear 'tis all in vain." So then we shift scenes back to Thor and the Warriors 3 and the giant flaming holocaust that he has created, which is consuming this entire big valley where they were before. And we see now why they had to run away, basically. And so Thor and the Warriors 3 are on this mountaintop and looking down at this huge flaming valley below. And Thor's saying, "We have escaped with our lives. We could do no more." And Hogan says, "But what of monstrous Mangog?"
"Mangog is slain, I vow. Not even magnificent Volstagg could survive yon vast inferno."
And Fandral is not having any of this. He's like, "Be thou silent, blubberous one. Let us now behold the folly of thine empty words." And he's pointing down into the valley, and Thor, squinty-eyed as he is here, says,
"The strength of a billion billion hath he claimed, and alas, his claim hath the ring of truth."
And we see Mangog rising up out of this big lake of what they're calling white hot lava, and just kind of rising unharmed out of it. And he makes like a giant lava snowball and hurls it at them. And we get a little bit of a description here from Thor.
"See how he doth seize a molten mass of white hot lava, and with bare hand hurls it like a meteor towards where we stand."
And the lump of lava lands next to them and scatters them. You get some really dramatic shadow effects here. This is probably, for my money, the most dramatic and interesting page out of the whole issue. And an issue which is pretty substandard as far as Kirby's art and Coletta's inks go. But we get a really nice, very 1960s sort of pop art picture of Thor here. Anyway, so the molten lava lands with a fa-zoom and sends the Warriors Three kind of scattering. And Fandral is running away from this. Says, "By my troth, in all the universe, no power can equal his.
If such be the foe we face, then Ragnarok is now upon us."
And Thor's like, "Comrades, take heart. Thor says thee nay. Are we not warriors born? Are we not Asgardians all? Are we not akin to gods?" Now, this is interesting. This is really interesting. Because here he seems to be saying that they're not gods. And that they're just like gods. So this is kind of an interesting little revelation here. I don't know what prompted this. I'm guessing some kind of pressure. Either, you know, social pressure, political pressure, sales pressure, something. Because they haven't been very shy about calling these people gods in the past. Anyway, so shift pages here, and Thor is exploding in the sort of magenta energy, and the Mangog is approaching, apparently having climbed the cliff. And Thor's like, "Not for such as we, the pale cast of surrender. Whilst we live, we fight." And he's starting to like shoot this energy off. "And as we dare, so shall we win." And Thor takes his hammer, starts smashing the mountainside. The Mangog's kind of climbing up it.
"His accursed hammer now shatter the very mountains upon which I stand, and hath caused a blinding rain which robs me of my vision."
And we see that Thor has created this big storm and he can't see anything.
"All of nature's fury now turns against me."
And it's like a big flash flood is surging down the mountain, trying to wash the Mangog away. And it really, actually, really cool panel here of the, you know, huge torrent of water trying to wash him away.
"But still I am the matchless Mangog, and when the storm is finally spent, Ragnarok yet shall fall this day."
And it's a strong enough water that actually pushes the Mangog over and is kind of washing him down this valley here.
"Though none who lived were more truly evil, more deserving of our fate than we, since death hath been decreed us, then let the cosmos perish. A billion tyrants shall not be denied."
And Thor is sitting here watching as Mangog kind of washes downstream a little bit.
"Once again the god of thunder hath won a brief respite, but 'tis only a moment's pause, where in all the fabled realm is power enow to vanish the unvanquishable. If it be not found, then woe to all who live."
And we shift scenes to the kingdom of Carnilla, where Baldur is still fighting against all of her ex-boyfriends, as we saw last issue. And Baldur's doing pretty well against these six guys who, I guess, you know, they've been frozen in rock for a while, so it's not surprising.
"Am I so distasteful to thee, brave Baldur, that thou wouldst do battle unto death when my throne is thine to share instead?"
"I cannot speak of such matters when Asgard is in deadly peril."
"Let Asgard fall. With me thou shalt find safety till the end of time."
"Never, mystic maiden," and he's blocking three swords at once with his own sword. "If Asgard falls, then all are doomed. And even if it were not so, what matters life if its price be the loss of pride and honor?
Since I am spurned, then thou must die."
"If such be Odin's will," says Baldur, "so be it."
And we then shift scenes back to Asgard and Odin's bedchamber, including his Viking racing car bed, much like Thor had in a previous issue. This is big. It's a much bigger bed than we saw him in last issue. So we can blame it on Kirby being inconsistent, or we can just say, well, you know, they kind of move him to a different bed every few hours. Anyway, so Sif is at his bedside and she's thinking to herself,
"Never hath Asgard greater need of thee, my liege, but to awaken thee, alas, would mean most certain death. Oh, how grim a jest hath fickle fate provided. But at thy side shall Sif remain till the final hour come."
And we see the recorder walk into the room. And I guess even robots can mack on Sif, because he comes in and says,
"Observation, you are the fairest of the fair. Conclusion, thus you are Sif, the goddess born."
But who art thou, and what is thy mission?
Recorder, I am called.
Recorder? Oft-times hath my beloved of thee spoken, and ever with true affection.
I guess there's some part of that story that we didn't get before. Thor has true affection for this robot.
Hence thou art welcome, and Sif shall hear thy words.
I come to caution you. The one you fear draws ever closer. But 'tis not Odin that he seeks. Conclusion. His purpose is to draw the fateful Odin sword, and so to end the universe. Now I must record the most momentous time of all.
Since the mighty Thor is on the field of battle, it shall be Sif who guards the Odin sword with blade and blood and life itself.
And Sif and the recorder go off to guard the sword, and they stand next to the sword, and it's got this big fancy holder and is kind of sitting there. And Sif is guarding it. It says,
"Now stand I ready. Let the Mangog come. If he reach this spot, it means that Thor hath perished. And so shall I welcome certain death, rather than live without my lord."
Observation. A hush falls over the embattled realm. The moment of destiny is almost upon us.
And we shift scenes back to the Warriors 3 and Thor. And the Warriors 3 are kind of going down back into the valley. And there's all this water there from the flash flood that Thor created. And Hogan says,
"The storm hath subsided. All is silent."
"But 'tis the silence of impending doom that now assails mine ears."
"Somewhere beneath the swirling seas is Mangog."
"Aye, and if he lives, where is the power that yet may stop him?"
"Hogan, Thor hath left us to seek the foe alone, and now he speeds along the bank in quest of Mangog."
And we see that Thor is running along the riverfront, just like he was saying earlier. I guess it's not really a river. It's a canyon full of water. But anyway, same difference. Grand Canyon has a river. Why can't this one? Anyway. So Thor's running looking for Mangog.
"Here in this place, Mangog must be stopped. For once past us, the greatest prize of all, defenseless stands."
And you see some rocks being kind of tossed from the side of this chasm, this canyon, whatever it is. And Thor realizes what it is. He says,
"'Tis as I feared. The monster lives. And now must come the ending."
And that is Thor number 156, as the Mangog is approaching Thor to destroy him. All right, so just a few thoughts on this, because I've been kind of making comments throughout of this. Artwork on this issue is really, really weak. We have Kirby in his squinty face. I'm wondering if that's just what happens when he hurries through an issue. We get these characters with really, really squinty eyes, and you know, there's hardly any detail in any of these panels. There's very, very scanty backgrounds on all this. You can tell that obviously Kirby was rushed on this, because the quality of the art in general is not as good as Kirby's normal stuff is. Don't even know if I want to blame Coletta for this, because he probably did as best he could with the layouts. No, Coletta's not in himself a really fantastic artist. I mean, obviously, he was not a comics penciler. I mean, he always worked as an inker. But here, I think we have a case where the original pencils were not so great themselves, and he kind of just did what he did, and that's what we have, and that's why we have what we have. So a little bit weak as far as the pencils and inks go. Now, as far as the story goes, I actually think it's kind of a little bit better than it was the last issue. There's a little bit less going on, but again, you know, whenever you have these big battle issues where we have, you know, we have Thor and the Warriors 3 fighting the Mangog, and that's pretty much the main thrust of the action here. It really is an extended fight scene over 20 pages or so. But at least it's an interesting fight. That's one thing they have to say about Kirby, and it's one of the things that I will always maintain about Kirby. He knew how to make an all-issue battle seem really interesting, and there's always interesting stuff going on whenever Kirby has these characters fight. And so that's, you know, gotta say, that's one of the geniuses of these Lee Kirby stories. Definitely some touches of Kirby's dialogue in here, not too often, though. You can see that I think that Stan really did dominate this issue as far as the scripting goes, Kirby sticking mostly to the art. And of course, that would make perfect sense if Kirby was in a hurry, and that's why the art was sketchy. Definitely seems like we have a lot more of a pure Stan Lee voice here than a Jack Kirby one. Now, getting back now to something I talked about a little bit earlier. How did the recorder get to Asgard? Now, this is one of these inconsistencies that just drives me up the frickin' wall. Sometimes Asgard is treated as though it's just in regular outer space, but usually Asgard is treated as though it's sort of kind of in another dimension. And so this was really weird that the recorder can fly right out of the, you know, the Rigelian star system where the colonizers are, and through the Black Galaxy or whatever, and land on the Rainbow Bridge. I mean, this kind of implies that Asgard is floating around right above Earth somewhere. And that's because that's the way it's always seems to have been portrayed. I mean, I don't have any problem with the concept of, okay, well, Asgard is in another dimension, but it's, you know, it's accessible from Earth, so it seems like it's really close to Earth. But this is actually the recorder flying through physical space to get to Asgard. And we've seen stuff like this in the Thor comic at other times, too. Remember, we were talking last episode about Thor and he flying around on the ship Skidbladnir. We talked about that when we talked about Thor God of Thunder number 7. Because that was it when ancient Thor and modern Thor, you know, took off in Skidbladnir and took off across the cosmos. So which is it, Marvel? I mean, is Asgard part of real space? Is it a real planet connected to Earth by this Rainbow Bridge thing? Or it's sort of, you know, like, well, you go by the Thor movie description of this huge kind of spinning machine thing that's really, really easy to break, apparently. But I just, it's just one of those points of inconsistencies that bothers me a little bit. Also really interesting, as I brought it up during the review, is him saying that the Asgardians were like gods. And I don't think that this is something that stuck. Obviously, that we have been hearing for years and years that, yes, these really are gods, and there's people who worship them. And this is going to come in, of course, much, much later in Thor Volume 3. But this is just one of those things, like I said, it bothers me a little bit, and so it's worth mentioning at very least. Besides, if they're not really gods, why don't they just say to the god Butcher Gore that they're just not gods, and maybe he'll leave them alone? I don't know. At least then maybe we won't ever see Gore again. All right, so next issue is going to wrap up the Mangog story, and of course, we'll be here to cover it with you next week. And then the week after that, I might not be here. Just be forewarned, I'm going to be taking a little bit of a road trip. Not sure if I'm going to get a show out that week or not. Anyway, without any further ado, we're going to go ahead and sign off for this week. If you have any comments, questions, etc., please feel free to email the show. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. We don't get a lot of mail, so it'd be good to hear from you. Anyway, so with that, we are going to go back over the Rainbow Bridge and back to Midgard, and we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.